Hello and welcome back to General Chat. I hope you guys enjoyed my impromptu vacation episode last week. At some point I'll edit it and re-upload it to sound better, but it was interesting to just record something tangential and off the cuff for you guys. This week, I have a really fun interview for you. I have Freckleface from Hearthcast. We talk about Sims mods and RPing your perfect family. We talk about sneaky rogue trickery, about transmog, about what we're excited about for Battle for Azeroth. Oh man, this episode is just jam-packed with fun stuff. Before we begin, I do want to let you know that there are some points in the audio that cut in and out. I believe there was a storm happening in Freckles' area, so the audio quality may not be quite up to par with what you would expect. Still, I think it's a fantastic episode and worth a listen. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll stop prattling off about it now, and we'll just get into it. Here's my episode with the wonderful Freckleface. Hey, Freckleface! Thank you for coming on!
Thanks for having me!
I've been listening to Hearthcast for a little while, and I've been very impressed by the fact that you guys have kept going for almost 400 episodes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been over 9 years now.
9 years, excuse me. That's like, whew. I think 9 years ago, I was still, I was finishing up high school.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s when we started, and so now, you know, almost a decade later, you know, I feel like almost a completely different person.
Oh, excuse me. Hearthcast talks a little bit about the entire Blizzardverse. Can you tell me a little bit about what it started out as? Like, what was the idea behind starting the Hearthcast?
Well, originally it was only a World of Warcraft podcast. And the reason why we chose the name Hearthcast is because, you know, your hearth takes you home. And our podcast is basically just a conversation between two friends about a game that we both enjoy. And neither of us take it too seriously, and we don't get into, you know, super technical stuff or, you know, advanced strategies and things like that. We just talk about really what we enjoy about the game. So we liked the name Hearthcast because it gives us the connection of, you know, hearthing home and talking with friends. Now, we started this back in 2009, so Hearth meant World of Warcraft, you know, a few years ago. Now this game Hearthstone comes out, and now it you know, you hear the title, you think we're a Hearthcast, or you think we're a Hearthstone podcast. And so we kind of decided to expand a little bit. We talk about Hearthstone. We talk about Heroes of the Storm pretty frequently. Sometimes we'll do some of the other Blizzard games, but we kind of keep it a lot to the Warcraft influence games. Like, there's a lot of characters from Warcraft that are in Heroes of the Storm. And of course, Hearthstone, the entire lore is based on World of Warcraft. So we are talking about the Blizzard universe, and we do talk about, you know, what they're doing in a broad sense as well. But we like more often to talk about their Warcraft-inspired games.
So you've been going for 9 years. World of Warcraft isn't that much older than your podcast itself. How in the world did you come to the World of Warcraft?
It was actually my husband. He had been playing since vanilla. He was really into it. He was an evangelist. I remember getting very annoyed that every time we would talk to someone, he would say, "You should play World of Warcraft." It would just come up. And I remember that phrase. And he would say it to me, and I would say, "No, I don't want to do it." And finally, one Christmas, I said, "Okay, for your Christmas present, I'm going to sit down and play this game." And that was... It was right before Burning Crusade launched, so still technically in vanilla is when I started playing. And I haven't stopped. And meanwhile, he's stopped and started a few times. And even a few years ago, he's like, "I don't think I'm ever coming back. Like, I don't think he's been active since the Lich King expansion." But I've just kept on. It's just something about the game that has just, you know, roped me in. And I haven't really felt the desire to take a break from it, you know, or I think I maybe unsubscribed like once for like a week and then came back to it. So yeah, it was just wanting to make him happy, or at least, you know, shut him up, which is why I started. And then I just stayed because I just really love the game.
So really, that was a Christmas present for you.
It was. Oh, now I gotta replace that gift.
Had you played games before that? Were you big into the nerd culture, nerd scene before this moment?
I never really called myself a nerd. I was really into reading. Before Warcraft, the only game I'd really played was The Sims. And that game I was very into. I still am very into it. I started playing The Sims when I was 16 years old. This is The Sims 1. I remember being at a friend's house and watching her do the build mode and like build walls and floors. And I was just absolutely fascinated. So I got that game and I've played every iteration of it. We're on The Sims 4 now. I think it's been 2 years since they released The Sims 4. I have all the expansion packs. And that game is still my, if I want to just shut down everything and like not interact with anybody and just, you know, shut my brain off, I will open up The Sims. Even after, and that's been like 16 years now that I've been playing this game. But Warcraft is my first MMO. And I've played a few since then. With my husband, he decided he wanted to do kind of a tour group, you know, try out different MMOs for a while. And nothing that I've played so far has been that good.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about The Sims, because I have a little bit of experience in The Sims.
Okay.
Not a whole lot, but my favorite thing with The Sims is being able to download like mods for The Sims, basically just appearance mods. I think that was the first game I ever was like, I'm going to download this thing from the internet.
Yeah, I remember all those flat face files I used to have in my computer. But the custom faces back when like you couldn't like change the individual eyes or anything like that, but you could download a whole face.
Yes, and you could get some like very fashionable emo hair or whatever.
Yes. So did you play it back in the day?
Well, I think I was playing it and I would say like middle school, early high school. So yes, probably in the early iterations of it, Sims 1 or Sims 2. And I would say I got into the character making.
Yeah.
And then got to the build part. And then lost all interest. What is your interest in The Sims? Like, which part of The Sims appeals to you the most?
I would say the character creations and just making a whole bunch of different storylines. I'm terrible at building stuff, which is why I use their gallery all the time. Like, I'll just go through and look for a cool house that someone else has already made, download it, and I'm done. But I really like to go through, like, I'll have a family. I have my own little internal stories that I have going on with all the different family members, you know, what their interests are, what their personality is. I like going in and making all their outfits based on a particular theme. Like if I think one person's really into, you know, rock or alternative stuff, I'll go in and I'll make every single outfit that they have kind of match what I think their style is. And with Sims 4, you can basically control a bunch of different families at once. Like once you switch over to a different household, the other family that you have, like they kind of do their own thing, but you can still see them wandering around town. So I've been playing with the same save file for about 2 years where I will create a bunch of families and get them all set up the way that I want them to and then move on to a different family. And then I see the first family wandering out as part of the background. So I have this entire customized town and it feels like all these characters are like, you know, friends of mine, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that system would make it really easy to create a show. Like you could make the town from Stranger Things probably.
Oh, you definitely could. Yeah. I've gone in and like I'll be watching something on TV and I was like, this is an interesting, you know, ensemble. And I'll go and I'll look through the gallery and I'll find what other people have made as Sims. And I always think that's really interesting or trying to figure out like, okay, I hear this person talking. What Sim trait does that correlate to? That always makes me laugh.
That is truly nerdy. I love that. Are the Sims backwards compatible? So if you have Sims 4, can you have like a family that you had in Sims 3 in there, or are they completely separate?
It's completely different. Like everything in this system is different.
Oh man.
Yeah.
It would have been so lovely to like have your OG family from Sims 1 and be able to carry that over. Do you ever visit them? Do you ever go see the old family?
I don't keep the old games because they, like the Sims 4, they made such good improvements to how the game runs that I was like, I can't deal with the Sims 3 again. I just haven't had any desire to go back to it. Because you had a little bit more flexibility with the Sims 3 in that, like, you could literally, like, if you had a family of 5, you could send one to the library and one to a friend's house and keep the others at home, and you could be micromanaging them all at once. Well, the Sims 4, you can't do that. The people who aren't in your active lot, they're just kind of like in stasis, you know, they're taking care of themselves. But the difference on my machine is just huge. It's like they went overly ambitious trying to let you like control everybody at once. And that they had to like backpedal from it. But it's like just a lot cleaner and a lot of emotions that they added to Sims 4. They make it, you know, they can get happy or angry or sad or embarrassed. And sometimes it's just like really hilarious to see what makes them feel embarrassed, for example, and what they do as a consequence of that.
That does sound very interesting. I'm sure someone with like an interest in psychology, which who isn't interested in that, but that has to be very interesting to see a kind of like AI, what makes someone angry, what makes someone embarrassed. Like they made a bad pancake and then they were thinking about that 5 years later, about that terrible pancake they made.
Right. They don't have what we have where you're just like trying to go to bed at night and then you just think of something like just really cringy from like a few years ago and it's like, oh well, now I'm not going to sleep. But luckily they don't have that. But I do think it's interesting to look at some of their emotional buffs. Like if they get sad, it'll say, okay, it actually works as buffs do for World of Warcraft, where you have something that affects them for a certain amount of time. So like they're sad for 8 hours. So okay, they do nothing differently, they're going to be sad. But if they do something constructive to help deal with it, like if they journal or if they just like lay down and cry for a few minutes, or if they talk to themselves in their mirror, or if they talk to somebody else specifically about being sad, it'll actually lower the time of it.
Oh wow.
So something like that, so you kind of think about, well, that's interesting, you know, you feel upset, do you deal with it right away and, you know, get through it faster, or you just kind of ignore it, pretend like nothing's wrong, and then it lingers.
Wow, life lessons from The Sims.
Yeah,
someone
really
needs to write that book.
Yeah. I was like, one day I'm going to do a podcast about The Sims, and it'll just be me rambling about, you know, my same family for like 6 months.
Well, what is a running theme within your Sims family? Because do you try to make it as close to reality as possible? Or are you thinking like, I'm going to make this dramatic scene where like the dad is really outgoing and loud and the mom is very like creative and the daughter is a vampire and the son is a furry? Or, like what are your thoughts going into this?
I would say the only really recurring theme I'd have is I try to make their lives difficult and then have them work to get it better. And sometimes I have to resort to using cheat codes to do so, because I think the game is a little bit too easy to make money. But I will start a new family sometimes and like take away everything, so they have absolutely nothing. And like, you know, their first few weeks, they're just absolutely miserable. Like they stink because they don't have a shower. They're, you know, passing out randomly, and they work a little bit and they get like some, you know, basic stuff, and then work a little bit more, and then like, you know, eventually they got a big mansion. And I really like being able to see that progression. And I usually, when I get to the point where they're when the family is really rich or they're very comfortable, then I kind of get bored and move on to a different family, but they're still in the background.
That sounds really fun to watch, that progression. It sounds inspiring. Like I feel like I would watch a little mini series on that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like, you know, a lot of stuff we do in life, you're like, am I making any progress on this? You know, and then, but your Sims, you know, you can see your little skill bar going up. You can run on the treadmill 3 times and, you know, lose a bunch of weight.
Oh man.
It's just a little bit more satisfying than real life.
Yeah, I would love to have a status bar because sometimes you just don't know. You're like, oh, I feel like I've been doing all this work to get all this experience, but you don't have that lovely Sims
Yeah.
experience bar or that WoW experience bar.
And
You just don't know.
you might be really close to level up, but you never know.
Oh, I think that could be a good, like, put that over, like, a screenshot of, like, Howling Fjord or something, and it's just like, you might be close to leveling up. You never know. You have to keep going.
Oh, that's good.
When you started playing World of Warcraft, what character did you start as? What race and class were you? Tell me about your little baby.
All right, my first character was a gnome rogue. And my husband was in a guild called Faces of Azeroth, and they had this big running theme of everybody had to have the word faith in their name. It's kind of an unwritten rule. So even before I had ever started playing Warcraft, like we'd had these conversations about different funny names, like happy face, sad face, frowny face. And I had said, Freckleface would be a great name, because it was also what I was called, sometimes in school. And so I just made a little gnome because they're super cute. Made a little redhead gnome with pigtails. The rogue was because they could stealth. And it kind of explained to me, the rogue is, they can, avoid combat sometimes if they want to. And that's really my favorite thing about it. You need a particular boss or mob, and you don't have to kill the entire camp to get there. You can just kind of stealth up, get what you need, and then stealth out. And I really like that. I forgot what server it was, but I still have that character. She's still 110. She's 110 now. I'm planning on leveling her up again with the next expansion. She just doesn't have good gear because I still haven't figured out how to be competitive with her in mythics or raids or anything like that. Just something about the combat itself doesn't really click with me. But for leveling, it's super fun to go around and pickpocket people, and do stuff at my own pace.
Absolutely. I've never successfully pickpocketed anyone. I'm a very bad rogue. I think I've gotten a rogue to like level 10.
Well, if you want to pick mad, you can do a custom emote, then target someone and say you've pickpocketed them, and they think it's real. They will get mad.
What do you enjoy about that class? If that was your first class, you've leveled one all the way up to max level, you stuck with it, clearly you like it. What are some of the mechanics specifically of that class that you enjoy?
My favorite thing about that is specifically the stealth related abilities and combinations. Not just being able to avoid combat, but also being able to as a mob and start out really strong because of stealthing. The ability to pick just because there's a lot of humor in that. There's just random items that you can get. They're just silly, and they're not worth anything, but they're just funny to get. There was an artifact trait that allowed rogues to not take falling damage. So that's gone now, but that was really fun, this expansion, just to, be on a mountain and just jump down for fun and hit the ground and just kind of you go like, oh, and then that's it. But yeah, having the ability to just kind of level around by myself. Take care of what I need to. I basically just keep her leveling only rather than trying to do group stuff with her. She gets the job done pretty quickly, I would say.
Do you have any other mains? Are you one of those people that has like 1/110 of every class, or do you prefer to get into the lore of classes? What are you looking like? Like, what class race combinations have you played?
I'm not super into the lore of races. So I do have three other 110s. So two of them I've been playing for a while. One of them is a goblin hunter. And I started her when she was Misty Pandaria, when Pet Battle came out. I wanted her so that I have my pet collection and also my hunter pet collection. And that's probably my favorite class so far because I do like always having, that companion pet next to me. Range attack, I find it easier having to get right up on the mob. And the way they look, their armor, taming rats. It's just really fun. And my Twitter avatar is, the goblin rogue. And I picked the goblin at that point because I was into, the short characters. The other main that I have is a Draenei mage, and I've had her for a little bit longer. And I just thought Draenei were pretty. That's my only real justification for picking the Draenei. They're pretty and it matched, and I wear pretty dresses on her, and I T-mog into pretty dresses. But again, she also has the ranged attack, which I find to be more my playstyle. I made a shaman this expansion just so I could see the class hall. And there
Oh,
was a
yes.
pet that you can only get from the shaman class hall. So I went through all that effort to level up a shaman just so I could do that. And while I do like it, I mean, like you can heal, you can damage, it's a very versatile class. I just never really played her much after I got what I had was on my checklist. And I'm not sure why. I don't know if I'm going to pick her back up again.
There's something that you hit on there, and you talked about a pet that you can only get from the shaman class hall, and those sound like the words of a collector.
Yes. I have a ton of battle pets. I want to say 700 unique ones. Yeah, it's kind of a problem.
No, that is amazing. I'm impressed. That was an impressed guess.
I'm still behind. There's you are you familiar with the Raiding with Leashes achievements?
Yeah.
I'm still missing a couple from, I think, Ice Crown, but I've gotten most of those. And then the one after that, the Cataclysm, I'm still missing a ton from those, but I've been working on that for a few months. The pet battles I've slowed down a little bit on is in Mists of Pandaria when they introduced that arena where you had to go in and once you had to fight like nine different battles, and once your pet died, it was dead. I tried to do that for the longest time and I could never get it. And I'd put it off for a few months and then I'd come back and try it again and I would lose and then I'd just get really frustrated. And I think somehow I feel like I need to defeat that before I continue on and do like the newest pet battles. But as far as collecting them, I still have a ton.
Is that like your Mount Petmore? That's something you gotta climb, you gotta summit it before you can
Yes.
figure it out.
Yeah, I think so. And even since I have failed at that, I've gotten like many other pets to level 25 that theoretically I should be able to like go in and, substitute out for it and have a better chance with it. But I don't know. I just need to do it.
All right, listeners, you gotta root for her. Tweet at Freckle, tell her she can do it. We
I
believe in you.
appreciate it.
Is there anything else you collect? Because I know, for instance, for me, I love doing transmog run, old content run for mounts, for pets. There's something about just going through an old dungeon or an old raid and just like rolling through and at the end going, "Ooh, I got this and I got this and this is shiny in my bag," and there's just this enjoyable feeling of doing that.
Yeah, transmog runs are really fun. Especially when you can just like, delete it out of your bag and then you still have it. I think that's great. Toys I'm really into. And I really love like every time I'm like in a place where we're kind of stopped, there's just people standing around, I always start busting out the toys and annoying people. My kick right now, before the expansion launches, is to get all the toys and the pets from the different fishermen around le the Legion area, because they added some in 7.3, and I missed the ball on it. I didn't get on it right away, but they all take about 2 to 3 hours to get high enough items to get stuff from them as a vendor, and only one is active per day. I
Ooh,
think
boy.
there's five or six of them. In addition to Conjurer Margos.
Well, speaking of fishes, I don't know if you saw recently, there was a world drop that has been added and will be active in BFA, which is just a big floppy fish that you can equip as a one-handed sword. So you can equip two floppy fishes and just be holding these big old fish swords and you smack people with fishes.
That's hilarious. Are you talking about the actual item, or is it like, can you transmog your sword into look like a fish?
So it is an actual item that looks like a fish, but of course you can transmog your sword to look like any other.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. Oh, no, that's amazing. I definitely need that. Especially as a sword. Okay, as a rogue, I can use swords. I can go around and just stab people with my fish.
Yeah, snack 'em. Fish, fish.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, so I will go ahead and link that in the show notes so you guys can check it out. But I was just so
Awesome.
tickled when I saw it yesterday.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to all the new content.
You talked about toys and how you like to whip those out in the still moments of the game. And
Yeah,
we've been talking about fishes. I know the fish punting toy is a really enjoyable one. What are some of your favorite toys? Like, what are the good old ones to whip out?
always use the Moreau's famous polish, which is, the one that takes off your armor. That always makes me laugh. I like to cast the BFF necklace on, whoever I'm in a party with. This gives them a nice little 24-hour buff. Yeah, kicking the carp. That always makes me laugh. Oh, the Dark Moon Seesaw.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's fun because, like, if you're by yourself, there'll be an ogre on the other end that you can play seesaw with. But if you're round and the people, it's just empty and someone else can get on there with you. That just always means.
That's a fun little game you can play. Just go in one of the cities, whichever faction you're in, and just seesaw around with some buddies, some strangers.
Yeah, you make friends like that.
Yeah, absolutely. One that I always really enjoy that gets brought out during raid breaks or just standing around before engaging the boss is the one that shoots rainbows, and you can shoot rainbows back and forth.
Oh yeah, I had that one when it was just a trinket. People in our group like went and like farmed that out of fell something. I know where it is. It's like near Ozara. But yeah, we used to like keep that trinket. We would like pull that out during raids, and then it came out of the toy. It was just awesome. It's like I'll randomly rainbow people.
Nothing feels quite as good as a rainbow to the face.
No, it doesn't. Oh, one more I have to mention is Narcissa's Mirror, I think is the name.
Yes.
And yeah, you cast her on your pet, and your pet becomes a little version of you. You just got a little mini me running around. And then I make him ride the disc or put a leash on him.
If that's not the most adorable thing, but I think it's especially adorable if you can, there's a toy that you can use to like shrink yourself again and again and again and make yourself really, really
They have a little battle pet. It's a little another little mini version.
tiny.
Yeah, they definitely have a sense of humor. Blizzard does.
Well, I'm glad they've added a lot of these in-game things that you can have that makes it feel a bit more like your game.
Oh, for sure.
For instance, an addition that just came out with the recent patch was the in-game like guild chat client that's like Discord essentially in the game. What are your thoughts on that?
I really like that. I'm involved in a couple of meetup groups locally. And in those groups, it's hard to get people centralized because we have people who play Horde, we have people who play Alliance, and we have people who play both. And a lot of times when people come out to a meetup and they're meeting us all for the first time, they're already set in their own server. And some of them might be willing to switch over, but we don't really have like a centralized server and guild for us all to kind of log in at once. So having this group in the Battle.net client is great. I actually started a group for us before the patch came out, and then you could only see it in the social tab in the client. And I think it's great now that you can see it in game. I was actually getting notifications in the chat window when I was sitting there fishing. I could see people chatting over in that section. One thing that I do think it's missing is notifications on your phone. Because when you have the Battle.net clients on your phone, you can chat with people, you can pull it up and whisper somebody who's on your friends list and tell them, you know, I'm running late to the raid or whatever, or try to make plans. But in those, you would get a notification for, like somebody messaged you, just like any other messaging client. But for this group thing, there's no notification that I know of that goes to your phone if somebody's chatting in the group. And I think what they're trying to do is rival Discord and Mumble and make it so that you don't have to use Discord if you want to use voice chat or if you want to be able to talk as a group without it being connected to characters. So like in my mind, someone can like hop on there on a Tuesday and say in the group chat, hey, I'm going to run Mythics tonight at around 8 o'clock. Does anybody else want to join? And other people can hop on and say, yeah, I'll be on at 8 or no, I'm busy. But missing those notifications means that that's not going to happen because nobody's going to see that until they're in game. And if you're wanting to use it to try to prompt people to get into game for, you know, a particular event, it's not going to do any good. So it's like a great start, but they need to follow through with it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I want to follow through on that with a question about whether or not you think they are working on an all-in-one mobile client, because I think that they've removed a lot of stuff from like the Battle.net client. Like they've removed the auction house, they've removed a lot of the functionality, and then I don't see, you know, like the Legion companion app staying around, right? So
yeah,
they have to be working on something, right? Because I feel like maybe the mobile auction house didn't contribute that much to auction business. I know you guys talked about that in one of your more recent podcasts, but I feel like just leaving nothing or just leaving like crumbs in different apps doesn't feel cohesive and doesn't feel a lot like the Blizzard brand we're used to. What do you think they're working on?
Doesn't. Yeah, I'm not sure. With the Legion app, there were some things that were wrong with that that I thought were basic that just drove me bonkers. Like this week I logged in and it was doing the little sound effects every time I press something. And I don't care for those. They kind of grate my ears. So I had in the menu turn off sound effects. Okay, so like I go in the menu, do that again. It's checked, you know, turn off sound effects, checked it. Unchecked it, checked it again. Okay, now it's off. You shouldn't have to like turn something off and on to be able to turn it on. You know, and it would do that every single time it would load up the thing and make me log in. It would keep sound effects on until I was logged in. And there's just a few other things like they seemed really minor to me, but it's like you can't be bothered to do that. Like with the auction house, mobile auction house, never used it because it didn't notice when you're auctioning. I would have totally been in that app all the time if, you know, put up for something for 48 hours. 48 hours later, the auction ends. Oh, okay, the auction ended. Let me go in there and let me relist it. Or like, oh, it's sold. One of my stacks of something sold. Let me go in there and, you know, put up more of my stacks. But since it never alerted me, I would just kind of lose steam on that or like just kind of lose focus. The Legion app almost feels like it was designed by like a different team other than Blizzard, like they outsourced it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I heard them say for the next expansion, they're going to have a very similar system to the class hall as far as sending your little characters out on missions. So if they have an app for that, I think it might be like a different one, like not a Legion one, but like a BFA one.
And stuff like that feels so, I don't think redundant is the right word, but it feels like, oh, it's just a bunch of different apps. I think perhaps they'd be better served to make a central app where it's like the command center app. And from this central app, you can do all of your follower missions and you can, you know, send people out. You can do your auction house trading. You can check on your characters. Maybe you can make choices like about your characters from that app. I think something
that would be great.
Wouldn't it? Yeah. I think something that would have really helped for the auction house, and I thought of it while you were talking about like, oh, I never got notifications. You have to log in to see that your listings have expired. a little option to just click and relist your item would have been amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I think the two apps would be, it's going to be confusing, but I just do kind of feel like that's the direction that they're going in. And there's so much stuff they could do with the app. You know, I would love to be able to log in and do like maybe a little bit of fishing or do some pet battles. Like I know part of the pet battling is going around and traveling and, you know, fighting the wild pets or fighting people in kind of remote locations. But some of them are like right there in the city, you know. And I think just having the option to like fight against, you know, a local NPC or even other players. You know, because it feels kind of odd to queue up for a thing against other players in the game because, like, it takes you completely out of where you are.
Yeah, I agree.
And you're like, okay, well, what am I playing right now? I'm playing Warcraft or I'm playing, you know, Pokemon. But I would totally do that on my phone, you know, for, like, 20 minutes here or there. Yeah, they just don't seem very interested in pursuing it.
I would play that on my lunch break all the time because you're right, it does... It removes you from the game. It takes you out of that immersion of playing in the world.
And yeah.
I think that stops a lot of people from doing it, because I don't think that pet battling is the thing that Blizzard thought it was going to be, the big deal that thought it was going to be. I think it kind of fizzled out, because you do have to do this queuing and waiting, and then you do this thing, and there's not the gratification that you get with dungeons or raids at the end. There's just kind of like... Yeah, you got some experience. Woo.
Yeah. I still really enjoy it, but it seems to be kind of, people are kind of split on it, I think. You know, because you could totally just not touch it and like nothing in your game is going to change. So I know a lot of people just don't bother.
Right, exactly. What are you most excited for with BFA? They've got a lot of modes this expansion. War mode, adventure mode.
Well, war mode is just PvP, right? Mm-hmm, PvP yeah. Flag on, yeah. I was happy about that because I had a few characters I abandoned because they were on PvP realms and I got tired of it. And now, don't matter.
Yes, I love these people very much, but my best friend and her partners came on my server, which is, I play on Cro-Magus, and it is a Horde PvP server, and they were like, no, we want to play on the server you're on so that we can play together, and I can make characters on another server, but for some reason they wanted to make it on Cro-Magus, and they insisted on making Alliance,
right.
And they didn't have a good time.
Oh.
So it's like, it's nice that you can do this now and avoid getting, you know, ganked repeatedly on a low level on a mostly Horde or mostly Alliance
it is.
Server.
I mean, especially with them doubling down on the Horde versus Alliance expansion, I was absolutely expecting them to go in the opposite direction. I was like, you know, we've done so much stuff together, you know, as factions, like the end game is the same. We're working together on every single end conflict. I was like, you know, when is the point where they're just going to say, you know, the faction thing is just kind of like, okay, you have separate quests and you have separate languages, but, you know, who cares if you go to a dungeon together? You're still both going to the dungeon. So it's kind of surprising they did the whole, you know, revamping the conflict again.
Were you surprised in a good way, or were you surprised in a kind of, I'm over this way? Because from my experience, I was in a, I'm kind of over this way. I was kind of looking for some fresh content.
Yeah. I think the content itself will be fresh. It's just the Horde versus Alliance thing. To me, it's a little overdone. So I'd mentioned before about these meetup groups that I go to, you know, so local people that come together to sit down and eat dinner. It always comes up, okay, do you play Horde versus Alliance? I mean, people play different things. All right, so if you're really devoted to one faction, that means you can't play with half the other people there in the group. So it causes a division between players. So there's that. The other thing is, everything in their storyline that they do, that they make a progression on, there has to be equal casualties on both sides. You know, like if a major person dies on the Alliance, a major person's going to die on the Horde. If the Alliance loses a bit of land, the Horde's going to lose a bit of land. And there is no way that they can end the storyline with one faction winning. In a few years when they come out with the last expansion at the end of the Horde won. The Horde won the war. You're just gonna completely destroy half of your fan base. And they're just gonna feel like, well, I did all that for nothing, So we already know the results of this is going to be, all right, we're gonna come out even at some point.
Right.
Which of course isn't too different than like, oh, there's a big dragon that's coming to town, what's gonna happen? We're gonna kill him. So I guess it's not that big of a deal, but my initial response was like, I don't like this division. But I'm glad that they're doing the PvP war mode rather than the servers, so there's some unity to kind of balance that out. And I'm just really curious. Like, I've tried to avoid learning what the story's about because I am hoping that they change my mind. I'm cautious about this. I'm like unsure about it, but like the back of my mind, it's Blizzard. They do a really good job when they put out content. So I'm just kind of like back of my mind hoping, like, all right, it's probably going to be better than what I'm expecting it to be.
One thing I will say that makes me optimistic about this, to speak to that point, is the stuff they've been doing prior to the launch. I think that the release of these comics that they've been doing these lore videos, there was one about Jaina that came out today. I think that having all of those things, expanding on lore for specific characters, is showing promise of a more lore-based expansion, which is something that I've wanted for a while, instead of just like going back in time and doing all these things and it doesn't really matter, or there's just like a big bad guy and it's like, okay, we have to defeat the big bad. This feels a bit more like there will be more exploration of the lore and what culminated to this point.
Yes, definitely. I noticed a difference when they added Christy Golden in as like kind of official part of Blizzard. It seems like they started adding more supplemental stuff and getting more fleshed out stories than I think we had before. And I just think that's a
Yes.
really great move on their part because her books are honestly the only ones I can read out of the Warcraft books. Like I've tried to read a few, they just end up being a little bit too dry for me. And things that I can connect to, like the characters emotionally. So, like, I'll get rid of the story and just serve me a lot better than just, reading facts, or battle strategies.
Right, because you can read a book about war moves and about the history of Azeroth as a whole, but then it just reads like kind of a non-interesting history book.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's still neat, it's still nifty, but I think you can definitely tell Christie's voice is coming through.
Yes, absolutely.
It's so tempting to just spend the whole interview talking about BFA, but I want to talk a little bit about the podcast.
Okay.
And I want to know, you've talked about you've done it for 9 years. It started out being called Hearthcast because you used your Hearthstone in World of Warcraft, but now that it's called Hearthcast, do you feel like you draw people that are more interested in Hearthstone, and do you feel obligated to talk about it because of the name?
I'm not sure if people are coming to us for because they are into Hearthstone. I think if they did, they would lose interest pretty quickly. So I don't know, like statistics or not, if people are finding us more quickly than they would have before. I don't know that I feel tempted to, like, I feel like I have to cater and like talk about Hearthstone a lot. It's just funny to me that I think, like, we could just redo the show and just do it all about Hearthstone, and the show would like it would match its title better. But definitely not wanting to do that. We love Warcraft. Feel like there's a lot more to talk about with Warcraft that's not overly technical. Hearthstone itself, like, I play Hearthstone every single day, and I talk to other people that play Hearthstone, and it's like they're speaking another language. You know, the way they describe plays, or, you know, they talk about, they just throw around a bunch of jargon. I don't know what they're talking about. Or like the way they analyze the plays they're going to make. It's like, I might have kind of a sense of how to strategize, but I wouldn't know how to verbalize it for sure. And they just say something, I'm like, all right, I just hit things. I don't know.
Well, the competitive meta for Hearthstone is just like, you're right, it's a whole other language. And once you start really getting into it, you know, you're talking about all the different things you're doing on your turn and how to build your deck and how to min-max everything to like get the best play so you can move up on the ladder. And it's a whole nother world that you can get immersed
It
in.
really is. And I do enjoy it, you know. It's just like I'm just not on the level at all to talk about it, you know, like I know what I'm talking about, but that way I play it for fun, you know, I hang out at around rank 18. That's fine. I got a whole bunch of gold, a whole bunch of dust. I enjoy the game, I laugh at the emotes. That's all I really need for it. Like I don't really have a desire to like sit there and talk about it every single day or every single week even. You know, unlike Warcraft, you can like just talk about the most mundane things in the game, like, oh, well, let's talk about the food in the game, and that's like a whole episode.
Ooh, actually,
You know, Hearthstone is much smaller.
I would like to know why you started podcasting.
I was dragged into it.
Please elaborate on that.
So Root had been playing Warcraft. We both had been kind of separately playing it, and I had not known him very well, but I found out through Facebook he played Warcraft. So I was like, "Oh, you play? I play too." We, you know, talked in game. We group up, do some stuff, and he asked me one day if I wanted to do a podcast with him, and I didn't know what a podcast was. I really didn't. I just was not connected to that world at all. And so he's like, oh, well, we just, you know, talk over chat and then record it for the internet. And I was like, okay, I don't know why someone would do that, but I'll give it a shot. So we did, and I like the process, and I just kind of like kept with it. And I still feel like, you know, in a lot of ways, he's kind of taking the lead, and you know, like he gets us started, he gets, you know, the equipment. I wouldn't know anything about that. But he gets the setup, he's got the space there. But I kept on it just because it's helped me meet a lot of people, and it's like the Warcraft podcast community is really cool. There's a lot of really interesting people. Like nobody thinks too highly of themselves. You know, we're all just like wanting to get on there and just kind of share our love of the game, you know, with everyone. And the people who we get some feedback from are always like really generous. And I don't feel like there's any of this, you know, people like you feel like, oh, you put a YouTube video out and people are just gonna like slam you with, you know, nasty comments.
Right.
But you know, podcasting, if someone's gonna take the time to like find your email address and send you an email, they're typically not going to do that unless they have something instructive to say. You know, so, and I've really enjoyed getting to know people that I wouldn't have otherwise.
I agree. Everyone that I've talked to and met through the Blizzard podcasting community has just been so nice and so open. Like, if I've had any questions, 'cause I'm just starting out, if I've had any questions or anything like that, everyone's so kind and welcoming. Did you have anyone like that when you first started out, or was it just you and Root?
It took a little while before we made some connections. I would say like very early on, this couple who did a podcast called Rarcast, and they actually helped us kind of give us a bump because we would write in questions for their show, and they would read them, and we had them on our show a couple of times. So then they would say like, hey, you know, we're gonna get the cast to go check us out. They sent us some, and that was like really, like in that first year, the people who get really nice boost there. I would say like one of our most long-standing connections has been over the Dark Moon Herald. Kevin, they're just really cool people. Like he's done a few times voiceovers for us. You know, he's had us both on his show like a few times, and we met him at BlizzCon. And he's just like a really cool person. You know, very chill. And we like to bounce ideas off each other.
It's really wonderful to have those kind of connections because you really do feel supported and you feel like part of a community. And you are part of a community. You grow the community because, you know, so 381 episodes later, 9 years of podcasting, you've hosted fireside gatherings, you do meetups, you do get-togethers to watch esports. What has it been like to grow a community, to take something that was a digital passion and turn it into something that exists IRL?
It's been really interesting. I would have to say when it became real for me was at BlizzCon when I went the first time. It's like, it is really cool, like talking to people over email, you know, and even over voice. But my goodness, meeting these people in person at their little gatherings that they do, like Calm Before the Storm, where they have other podcasters, and meeting in person, you know, other people that podcast and, you know, the people that follow the same circle. And they're just so nice and so genuine, and you can just sit there and like talk to them, you know, like forever. And it was just really cool. And it feels like, you know, kind of a family. And just really neat.
I feel like that sense of community is really what we're all looking to get out of doing this, doing podcasts, playing any sort of community-based game, that feeling of being seen and recognized. Do you feel that when you have your meetups and you see someone that you met online and you put a face to the name and you're like, oh yeah, I recognize that voice from Guild Chat?
Well, interesting enough, it's kind of reversed because typically we meet someone first and then we'll like play with them. Because I have found that like sometimes people will want to play and then they might live in Orlando or say they live in Orlando and then they never show up. And it's like for people that I play with, like there's just a big difference between like once you meet someone in person and you know that they're probably not a serial killer versus like, you know, a disembodied voice, which like you can still have connections that way. But, you know, if I'm going to make a local group, you know, if I never meet them, I might as well be playing with somebody in Australia. Like, it doesn't make a difference, you know, if I don't know you. And with that group being on the web, like, I'm just, you know, if someone, like, joins a group and they're immediately, like, they want to exchange battle tags and, like, you know, join the guild or stuff, I kind of go, like, you gotta come meet us first. Because you just don't know. I mean, like, Orlando isn't, like, the safest city in the world. So I'm just, like, you know, my caution lights are on. I'm just going, like, I don't know. Which, I just didn't, like, answer the question. I just went, like, complete opposite direction. the one time we had a guild, and this is, like, with my husband, our first guild. We were in Orlando. We decided to meet up. It was very much like the first episode of The Guild.
Ooh.
And I don't know if you've seen that series with Felicia Day. It was so much like that, where it's like, yeah, you're putting together this voice that you've been hearing for a long time, and now there's Face, and like Face doesn't look like what you thought it did. And now we don't know how to talk to each other because we're used to just, you know, staring into screen and talking our headphones, and now we have to sit around. And it is just awkward. So I get what you're coming from.
I mean, it can absolutely be awkward. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, I pictured you as just this like dainty person. And then you walk up and it's like a giant and you're just used to seeing this like little goblin person. And you're like, oh, this is different.
Yeah, with my nickname, I think I don't surprise very many people, you know, showing up with the red hair and freckles. People are like, okay, yeah, we expected that.
But since you have grown this community and you are doing it kind of backwards from the way that I explained, you know, you're not meeting people that you've talked with forever. You're creating a space for people to come and meet you and come to hang out. You've done several fireside gatherings, and this is something that you continue to do, if I'm not
Right.
mistaken. What is the process of setting that up like?
Well, let's see, like which particular aspect, or just all of it?
I think deciding that that's something that you're going to do, A, and then B, like how do you get involved with that? Is that something that Blizzard has to approve, or you can just do it? Just say, hey, bring your phones, let's just hang out. Like, how does that
So
work?
the fireside gatherings, anyone can make one. They do have to be approved, and there's a few conditions that it has to meet before it can be approved. And one of them is it has to be open to the public. So anyone can go on to the Blizzard website and submit their event and fill in, you know, where it's going to be, the day, the time. And then what that does is they'll look at it and they'll say, okay, it's public, it's fine. There's two different levels of fireside gatherings. There's one that anyone can make, and they will approve any event that takes place in a public place and isn't discriminatory, you know, towards anyone. Just if something is open up to anyone, they'll have the fireside. And once that person, so they're logged in the Battle.net account, they go to the place, they activate the fireside gathering within the game. So now you have access to some fireside brawls, some stuff that you can only do while you're there. You can see other people on the Wi-Fi. You can make connections that way. Now, once you've done that, I don't know if it's once or twice, you become an established tavern.
Oh.
And once you're in a yeah, once you're an established tavern, then you have some extra stuff that you can do. Specifically, like when you make an event and people come to those events and they play the brawl there, you get awarded the warlock skin Nimsy.
So what would be your advice to someone who has been kind of thinking about doing this and who wants to get involved in starting fireside gatherings and building a community, but is maybe afraid that no one will be interested or is thinking like, oh, it's kind of unreachable, like it's kind of difficult to set up. What are your words to someone who wants to start?
I would say the most important thing would be to have a good space that has power and good Wi-Fi, because those are things that will really frustrate people if those aren't adequately set up. And once you have the space, you know, you can work with whoever owns that to kind of help you get the word out. There's places you can advertise, like Facebook. Like you can find groups within your community. You can post there. Like there's several groups in Orlando that meet, and they all will like make an event on Facebook, and then like they'll post it and, you know, encourage people to share. We also use meetup.com to make events, and so you reach other people who are in the area and looking for events. And you just kind of have to attack it like several different ways. You know, if you rely only on Facebook or only on word of mouth, you might not have a ton of people. If you use a lot of different methods, you know, you get more out there. And then once you have an event, you know, if it's good, you're more likely to have people the next time. You know, tell people to invite their friends. And like you honestly, you might not have that many at the beginning, but it can definitely grow. And you just have to kind of like keep your energy up, keep your spirits up. Don't go, okay, we'll only have five people are going to come, so I'm just going to cancel it. You know, just like go, like make the connections. And if it's smaller, you actually have more of an opportunity to be able to like talk to the people there. Like I've been at some of the big events where there's, you know, 50 or 60 people, and you're just kind of, you know, running around in a way a lot of the day. And you don't really get to meet everybody. But if you start out small and those people feel like you know them and that you expect them there at the next time, then they're more likely to show up. And so you just have to, you know, nothing that's good comes quickly. You just have to be willing to, you know, to put in the effort over, you know, several months or so to build up your group.
I think that that is the pivotal point. Nothing comes quickly. You just have to
Yeah, just
start.
start and have to keep on going.
Thank you so much for giving that beautiful piece of advice to
Ah.
everyone. We are getting close to wrapping up, and I want to ask my what if closing questions. That's usually how I close out the show. I ask one or two questions with kind of a what if
Okay.
premise, and we're gonna get on over to those. Are you
I
ready? Can
think
you handle
so.
it?
I'm ready for it.
The first question is going to be, if you were to create a Hearthstone card, what would the mechanics of that card be? Do you want a death rattle? Do
Ooh.
you want, something that divides? Do you want something that is a shield? Do you want a healing card? What is your card going to
I
look
want
like?
something that is that randomizes something. Like my favorite cards in Hearthstone are
Ooh.
the ones that just do something really wacky. So maybe the card is like it'll randomly either take a card out of your opponent's hand or give them a card out of your hand. No, because you might play it when you don't have anything. Oh, maybe from your deck. So maybe like you play it and you either take a card from their deck and you put it in your deck, or you give them a card from your deck. So you got like a 50-50 shot for it to either go really well for you or go really badly for you, depending on, which event happens. And even then, depending on which card you end up getting or giving away, that could change the game or not. So I think that'd be my ideal, just something like really silly and really fun.
Ooh, do you love a gimmick card, Freckles?
I definitely do. I love gimmicky cards, and I'm so bad because I tend to pick cards either in Constructed or Arena that are not good cards. But I don't care because I just want to see them play out and I want to see them do something really wacky. I just love silliness.
Do you have any favorite gimmicky cards? One that I can think of, for instance, is one of the earlier on ones with I can't remember the exact names, but if you played both of them, if you had both of them on the board, they merged to become
Oh yeah, well
Thaddeus,
they
which
have
was
to,
like
if the other one dies, their death rattle is the if the other one had died, it becomes
Yes.
11-11. Yeah, that one's tough, and you don't see it proc very often. But when it's getting played a lot, you might go, if you both had them both in your deck, then it kind of made you hesitate. You're like, okay, well, you played a Fugain, I have a Stegan. Should I play it or not? So both get it and had to time it. Yeah, I do like that kind of stuff. My favorite one was the warrior card that replaces your deck with a Discover. And I actually crafted a
Ooh.
golden version of it so that when I get that card and I replace my whole deck, everything comes up as a golden Discover card. And then all my cards are golden the rest of the game. And it's just so pretty.
No.
Yeah.
That does sound gorgeous. Oh, the addition of golden cards is such a fun thing. It just makes you feel so shiny and pretty.
Yes, it does. It does. Do you keep all of yours, or do you ever disenchant any?
Very rarely I'll disenchant. If it is a class that I do not play and I know that I just don't like that class and I'm just really not going to play it that often, then
Okay.
I will disenchant a golden.
My rule of thumb is if I get a golden classic, any I'll keep it. If it's golden classic mini, I'll keep it. Spells, golden, no, dust those. Any card that summons another minion, I will keep that because then you get two goldens for the price of one.
Yeah, with that discover, it sounded like
Yeah,
infinite
exactly. Or if it's
goldens.
like, there's one right now, like the Cursed Revenant, like it's a 5/1, but the Death Rattle summons another 5/1. So that one I got the golden of, I keep that because that the little thing that it summons is also golden. So that's fine. The other golden minions, it's like, all right, if I don't play that much, then I'd rather have the dust to make, new cards. But definitely if it summons something or if it's a discover or gives you a copy of something, I keep the golden card so I get the golden effect.
Well, we know that not all that glitters is gold. For instance, we have a lot of new shiny playable races
Yes.
coming in Battle for Azeroth. If you were to make any new race, actually, let me say that. If you were to make any pre-existing race playable, what would you make?
Ooh, that's a good question. I do love my Murlocs, but I don't know how much customization there would be. So trying to think of something that you could really do both genders really well. Maybe Naga? Because they're pretty, yeah. They can be
Ooh.
all shiny. They can do different colors for their scales. Yeah, I would say that. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And then everyone who has a like a mermaid dream
Ooh.
can kind of make their.
Yeah. Yeah, I want that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You have like a customizable snake hair, you
Yeah, that'd be
know.
cool. I would say ogres too, but I don't know what their females look like. I don't have females.
They do. I've seen female ogres, and I think they look pretty much the same as the male ogres, but with boobs.
That could be fun. That's my second choice. Because they're hilarious.
They're fantastic and fabulous outfit choices. You know, just a plethora of loincloths.
Yeah, this is my striped loincloth. This is my polka dot loincloth. Tons of options.
Yeah, my Gucci loincloth, you know.
Gotta have the name brand.
Freckleface, thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a fun
Absolutely. Thank you
interview
so
for
much for
me.
inviting me. I was so happy I was able to join you.
Yeah, can you let the listeners know where they can find you?
Sure. We are over at hearthcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. My Twitter is at hearthcastfreck. It's probably the fastest way to get a hold of me because you can always just send me a mention there or a DM and I'll get around to my phone.
And I'll put all of those down below so you can go check her out. Hearthcast is fantastic. There's such great banter in it. I know you guys will enjoy it, especially if you enjoyed this interview.
Thank you.
And thank you. And until next time, bye guys.
Bye.
All right. That was my episode with Freckleface. If you like this episode and want to help support me, please rate and review on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. It really helps me get seen and get more guests on, and maybe one day get sponsorships or Patreon so that I can get an editor for this podcast and the audio quality will go up a little bit. I really appreciate it. It helps me out a lot. Thank you, and until the next one, bye.